You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Captain America, y'all. Captain America, right? How many of you have seen a movie with Captain America in it? How many of you recognize that I have a 10-pack right now? I counted them in the mirror this morning. It's pretty crazy. How many of you read a Captain America comic book? All right. So in the movies, at least the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we meet Captain America before he's Captain America. And what is his name before he... Well, it's his name the whole time, but what is his name?
Steve Rogers,
right. And Steve Rogers did not have a 10-pack, okay? Steve Rogers had, like, a negative pack. Like, he was this scrawny little guy, and then they doped him up on steroids, and that's America! So they called him Captain America. And of course, he got bigger. But as little Steve Rogers, there was this scene in Captain America, the First Avenger, where he's fighting these guys, these guys are talking bad about, like, people that serve in World War II. And so he decides to fight these guys, and of course they beat him up. And he is down on the ground, and they're like, stay down! And there is a line. And if you know the line, you're going to say it with me here, because when he's down on the ground, he stands back up and says, I can do this all day. And so, you know, he is saying, I'm here to take it. I'm going to take it. And then, without getting into too many spoilers, that line comes up in a very important fight, in a civil war later down the road. And he, you know, was told, stay down. And he says, okay, that was really work. So he was told to stay down, and his response was, all right, and then in Avengers Endgame, without too many spoilers, there's a bad guy that beats him up and knocks him down, and he gets up and says, I can do this all day. And so that line of I can do this all day was kind of, it became obviously a thing throughout the movie and the movies. And the idea of him saying, you know what, whatever you got for me, I can take it. I'm going to take it. And by the way, my shield looks really weird because it's also a Nerf dart gun. It's pretty cool that way. Which actually, you know, it doesn't shoot very well. But if you're playing a Nerf dart war, having a shield is really effective. So that line where Captain America, where Steve Rogers says, I can do this all day, is where we're going this morning. We're on the last week of our series called Drastic, and we're looking, as you saw in the intro video there, we're looking at passages in the Bible where Jesus told us, as followers of his, to do drastic things. And the first week, which we titled Hate Your Mama, Jesus said, you know, you must love me, you must, compared to how much you love me, you must hate your mother and father, your son and daughter, your own wife, your children, all of that, because you should love me more. So then the second week we looked at the idea of Jesus says, if your hand caused you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to lose your hand than to, you know, have your whole body go to hell. And you have to listen to that at mc3church.org. He also said, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. And then last week we talked about go drown yourself, where Jesus says, you know, it'd be better for you, your example matters, and it would be better for you to tie a millstone, which is a really big rock, around your neck and go jump into the deepest ocean rather than cause a little person, a lesser person, not like physically little, but someone that is not as far along in their walk with Jesus, rather than causing them to stumble. And so this is the final drastic thing, and we're going to come into this in a second. But the point that we're going to look at this morning is that we need to be drastic in loving our enemies. We need to be drastic in loving our enemies. And so, again, each of these statements are intentionally, they're kind of thought-provoking, they're challenging, they are drastic because Jesus wants us to think. He doesn't want us just to be like, yeah, of course I love you. Yeah, of course I love my enemies. You know, of course, it's a little sin. It's not that big of a deal. And Jesus says, no, all these things do matter. And so these are drastic things that you need to do if you're calling yourself a follower of mine. And so what we need to do, and I'm going to look at this passage here, is that we should do this all day. Because he's talking about this idea of let him hurt you, of letting him take it. And we're going to be in Matthew chapter 5. We'll turn on the house lights here. If you have a paper Bible, you can open to Matthew 5. If you've got the YouVersion app, we're going to be at Matthew, which is the first book of the New Testament. So about two-thirds of the way through, the zooming it through. And then we're going to be in Matthew chapter 5. And Matthew chapter 5 is actually part of what we looked at a couple weeks ago when Jesus said, cut off your hand. It's part of what's called the Sermon on the Mount. And the reason it's called the Sermon on the Mount is because Jesus gave a sermon and he was on a mountain. So, Sermon on the Mount. Very, very creative title. And so earlier he was talking about this idea of, he said, with when it comes to cut off your hand and gouge out your eye, he says, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you. And the whole Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, I'm going to share these things that you might have heard. And of course, not for us necessarily, but for the Jewish people that he was speaking to, his audience, 2,000 years ago, he was speaking to Jewish people that knew the law. They knew the Old Covenant law, the Old Testament law, the law of Moses, however you want to call it, the Torah. And he said, but you know these things, but I'm going to ramp it up a bit. I'm going to move it to the next level, because the things that you're trying to follow as the law are really not following me. And so that's what Matthew chapter 5 is. And the first thing that Jesus says, there's two main categories here. I'm like breaking it way down. We were just talking about this a couple of weeks ago in Prime Basics. Like, if you like charting and writing, you know, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, this is the perfect day for you. So the first thing we should do is don't retaliate. Give. Jesus says, don't retaliate. Give. If you're my follower, when someone hurts you, don't fight back. Don't retaliate. Just stand up and take it. I can do this all day. And so this is what he says in the first part of this section we're looking at in verse 38 of Matthew chapter 5. And we're going to be bouncing around a little bit in that passage, so you can keep it there. Jesus says, you have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. So again, he's sharing things with the context, the Jewish audience, mostly Jewish audience, there were some Romans there, Gentiles, that according to the context, you guys are aware of, you know this rule, which is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And that's a fancy word for that is the lex talionis, which is the Roman law of the claw. It was a kind of a Roman, Roman was in charge, I should say this, Rome was in charge at this time. The Jews were subservient to the Roman Empire, living their way the way they want to, as much as they were allowed to by Rome. And Jesus says, you know the law of the call. You know lex talionis, which means if you hurt me, I hurt you back. If you take out my eye, I'm going to take out your eye. If you knock out one of my teeth, I'm going to knock out one of your teeth. That's the rule. That's the law. That's the way it is. You've heard that. But Jesus says, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. And so he's saying, look, he's about to set up. He's going to give some examples here. He says, but the law that you're aware of, the rule you're aware of, says if they hurt you, you get them back. You take revenge. You retaliate. Whatever they do to you, you get back to them. And Jesus says, you know what? I'm going to tell you just the opposite. He says, don't retaliate. Don't resist an evil person. And we're going to come back to this in a little bit. But this word evil, I think Jesus says this on purpose. And the Greek word is poneros, which means this evil, wicked. It's not like someone's a little naughty. This is a bad person. And I think Jesus says this on purpose because we will probably, he understands humanity because he lived as a human, that we would be like, well, they're really bad, so it's okay if I get back at them. It's okay if I take revenge on them. Jesus says, no, do not resist an evil person. He makes it an extreme statement. And then a little bit later in verse 42, he says, give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. So he says, don't resist, don't fight back. Instead, give, which is just the opposite of fighting back. Instead of taking an eye or taking a tooth, he says, give them something. And so he's making a very drastic statement to his audience. And he says, don't retaliate. give. And so our attitude should be like Steve Rogers. That when someone is attacking us, when someone is doing something against us, when they're hurting us, Jesus says, just stand up and take it. I could do this all day. I could do this all day. Why? Because Jesus is trying to make a point. And so he gives some examples here. He says, don't retaliate, give. He says, for example, the other cheek. Let's talk about the other cheek. And how many of you have ever heard the phrase, turn the other cheek? This is actually a phrase that people use out in the world, outside of church world, that actually is in the Bible. There are a lot of things that are not in the Bible that we use, like, oh, the Bible probably says somewhere, you know, God will never give you more than you can handle. You know, and these things that aren't really there. This one actually is in the Bible, and it comes from this verse in Matthew chapter 5. And Jesus says, here's the example. So he's given some examples. So what does this look like? So if you're supposed to not retaliate but to give, what does this look like? And Jesus says, well, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek. Now, his Jewish audience understands what he's saying. Because, again, according to the Roman law, the Romans were in charge. According to Roman law, a slap on the cheek was the highest form of insult that didn't actually physically hurt you. Like, if you move beyond that, you know, then you're, you know, like, let's say this would be manslaughter, and this isn't a very good comparison, but this would be manslaughter. Anything beyond this would be murder. But this is the highest level of insult where you're not actually hurting somebody. And of course, the right cheek, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. People that are left-handed, they're sinister, because that's what the word left-handed means. But this was the right cheek. So this is your prominent cheek, because apparently, you know, you're like, this is my good side, I guess. This is my good side. And so if they slap you on your right cheek, right there, according to Roman law, you have the right to sue them for insulting you. So you're not going to sue them for physical injury, but this is more like pain and suffering. You know what I'm saying? According to the law, you can sue for pain and suffering, and you're totally legit, and you would get it because someone insulted you by slapping you on the right cheek. But Jesus says, turn to them the other cheek also. Even though law allows you to sue them for insulting you in such a great way, Jesus says, you know what, give them the other cheek. Let them take the other cheek. And so this wasn't Jesus saying, you know, just stand there and get smacked around. He was saying, be willing to not take revenge. Be willing to offer something to someone that doesn't deserve it. He says, don't retaliate, give. So he says, if they slap you on the right cheek, even though you have the right to sue them, don't even sue them. Do the opposite. Give them the other cheek. All right, you got this one too. Take it. Take it. So then he goes on and shares another example. He says, for example, how about the outer garment? And again, you're probably familiar with this concept here. But Jesus goes on in verse 40 and says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt. So again, if you did something to someone, if you say you killed their cow accidentally, or, you know, you accidentally, you know, pulled the spokes off of their chariot or something like that, or maybe you did it on purpose, you know, according to law, they could sue you to get, you know, to get the reparations, to get something back out of it. Maybe you don't have a cow to give them, but they could say, you know what, I'm going to sue you for your shirt. And shirt isn't they really kind of struggle to translate this because we don't really have a word for it. This word, this inner garment, also translated shirt, is chiton, which is a close-fitting inner vest covering down to the legs. So it's not your underwear, because that's the other thing, they don't translate underwear, but it's kind of like it's what you would wear, like your clothes, okay? I guess that, it's a shirt, that's why they translated it that way. So it's like if they sue you, they have the right to take your shirt from you. Now, the law is very specific, however, because it accounts for people that might be poor, for people that might not have much. And so you are not allowed to take their coat, because that might be the only outer clothing they have. That might be the only thing they have to keep them warm. That might be all they've got because they live on the street or whatever. And so the law says they can sue and take your shirt, but you're not allowed to take the coat. The outer coat. But Jesus says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Do the extra thing. Not retaliate, Not say, I'm going to countersue you. But he says, here, give him your coat as well. And again, this is drastic stuff. And what I guess is important, and this next one's really going to be obvious to this. But Jewish people, again, were under the Roman Empire. And an empire means someone came in and conquered you. So in general, no one's a fan of that anyway. But the Jews were specifically or particularly offended by the Romans because the Romans didn't worship Yahweh, God. They were pagans. They worshipped idols. They worshipped all sorts of other things. They were a godless culture. And it's true. And so the Romans were almost not just an oppressive empire, but also offensive to them because basically everything that Rome did was like anti their Jewish religion. And so they really didn't like Rome. And here is this Jewish rabbi named Jesus saying, I'm not only just saying, you know, if your friend does this, but we're not talking about the Romans. And everybody hates the Romans. But he says, if someone sues you, give him your coat as well. Which then he gives, and this is the very obvious, the extremist, if you will, if that's a word, example of this, is, for example, another mile. And again, this is another phrase, you know, to go the extra mile, to go the second mile, however you want to call that. That comes from this passage in Matthew chapter 5 as well. And Jesus says in verse 41, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile. So, again, there's a rule, called impressment. It is a Roman law that any Roman official, a soldier or an authority figure or a politician or anything, any Roman official had the right to grab any subservient culture, so whether that was Jewish or any other area that they conquered, they had the right to make that person carry their stuff, carry their armor, carry their supplies, carry their blankets, whatever they had by rule, by law. They could force anyone to carry for 1 mile. And that was the law. And if you decided you did not want to do that, the punishment was pretty easy. It was death. And so any Roman soldier, any Roman official could come along and be like, hey, you, Jew, carry my bags for me. And if you said no, because I don't like the Romans, because you're oppressing me anyway, and because you're against everything that I believe about my relationship with God, he would say, okay, dead. Now you go ahead and carry my stuff. Okay, I'm in. Like, and so this was the law. And again, it wasn't a very pleasant law. Nobody wants to carry. And a mile's a long time. And you know, if you think about a soldier and the armor and the things that they wore back then, and, you know, the Roman military was pretty impressive. That's how they were able to conquer the way they did. And so they're kind of, you know, they've got at least a 6-pack, maybe an 8-pack, possibly a 10-pack. So they're used to carrying armor, but they could force any citizen that is under their empire to carry their things for a mile. And a mile is a long time when you're carrying armor. And so it was not a pleasant thing. And so Jesus says, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, they're like, yeah, okay, I get that. He says, go with them 2 miles. Go the extra mile. Go another mile. Because Jesus was making this statement that we should be willing for our enemies. And again, Rome was the enemy. We should be willing to love our enemies. We should be willing to care for our enemies. We should be willing to not just retaliate against them, but to give to them. So if they ask for one cheek, give them the other cheek. If they ask for your shirt, give them your coat. If they ask for 1 mile, give them 2. Go above and beyond in caring for our enemies, caring for the people around us. And that's pretty big deal. And so Jesus says, don't retaliate, give. That's the big category. Here's the second big category. Jesus says, don't hate, love. Now he's kind of taking it to the next step further. So before it was, they did this thing to you, you can get back at them. He says, no, don't. Just give them something. He says, now, you know, this is physical. Okay, whatever, Jesus, I'll do that. But I still don't like them. But over here now, Jesus says, not only should you do the physical thing, but now your heart, your attitude should be different. Instead of hating your enemy, you should love them. And this is drastic stuff. Like maybe it's not as drastic as physically cutting off your hand, Maybe it's not as drastic as saying that you hate your mama. But I don't know. Maybe it's more drastic to love your enemies. And so in verses 43 and 44, Jesus goes on and says, he says, you have heard that it was said. Again, this is what they're aware of. They know this rule. This is common knowledge. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And everybody was like, yeah, of course, that makes sense. I love my neighbor. Jesus told me to love my neighbor. Love my neighbor as myself. But you hate your enemy because that's your enemy and you hate them. That's fair. He says, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Jesus says, you know you're supposed to love the people around you. Yeah, I love the people that love me back. But he says, now I want you to love your enemies. And the Greek word here is a word that you're all familiar with probably. If you've been around me, we certainly talk about it a lot. It's the word agape. And agape is unconditional love. It means love with no strings attached. It means no matter what they do, you still love them. And so love, I think probably one of the best examples we have is probably a parent to a child. Like no matter what your kid does, no matter what stupid things they do, you still love them. And Jesus says, you need to love that way for your enemies. This is drastic stuff. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And we're going to come back to this idea in a little bit. He says, pray for them. Like, okay, I'll just love them. That's fine. I'll just do that. But he says, can I even go beyond that? Pray for them. So wait, prayer, this idea here, Jesus isn't like praying that they will, you know, slip on a rock and fall on a tack or something like that. I don't know what that meant. But he says, you know, like, pray for their benefit. Pray for their good. That you may be children of your Father in heaven. And then he jumps down with that summary statement in verse 48, just like we saw in verse 42. He says, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. And the interesting thing about this is like, okay, how does this work? Because we are all sinners, we're all failures, we all mess up. How is it that Jesus says, be perfect? Like, how does that work? And this idea of perfection isn't in terms of sin. But the word actually has more of a feeling of being complete, being full. And so the Greek word here, teleos, and I'm throwing a lot of Greek out there. That's the word that was written in. That was the language that was written in. And sometimes the words don't have quite the same nuance. But this word perfect is the idea of like, you know, if you're, I know at dinner time, you know, I'll drink all of my tea for dinner or whatever. And Tommy or one of the kids will be like, hey, would you like more? And they'll pour. And you probably saw that. It was a Geico commercial. Would you like cheese? You know, it's like, okay, yeah, keep coming. And then when it's to the top, then I'll be like, oh, perfect. Thanks. It's full. It's complete. That's where it should be. And so Jesus is saying here is if you want to be a well-rounded follower of me, if you want to be a complete follower of Jesus, it's not just loving those that love you back. It's not just hating your enemies. He said to be a complete, a perfect follower, full to the top. It means you're going to love those that persecute you. You're not going to retaliate against your enemies. You're going to pray for them. He says that's what makes us a complete follower of Jesus. And there's reasons that he said this, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he then gives, so there's your two big categories, don't retaliate, give, don't hate, love. Then he gives some examples. And the first example he gives is God moves, is how I put this. I was really struggling with the right words here, but you'll get the idea. He says an example in verse 45. He says, he, meaning he's talking about the Father. He said, you'll be perfect. You'll be like your Father in heaven. You'll be children of your Father in heaven. He says, he, meaning the Father, causes his Son to rise, S-U-N, if you're listening online, S-U-N, his Son to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And Jesus is saying, look, you're like, oh, I'm not going to be nice to my enemy. I don't want to love my enemy. He's like, God loves his enemies. He says, God, the sun rises for the evil people, just like it rises for good people. And in good people, again, he's talking about those that are following me. And more specifically, he says he sends rain to the righteous. to those that are followers of God, those that are doing the good things, and to the unrighteous. He sends rain to both of them. And rain here is a good thing. You know, rain, we're like, oh, it's a rainy day song. It's a sad thing. No, rain, if you have crops, rain's a big deal. And so God sends rain, not just for the people that deserve it, but the ones that don't. God causes the sun to rise, not just for the people that deserve it, but for the ones that don't. And so there's an implied statement here. You think you're better than God? Because God doesn't go, oh, well, they don't deserve it. And again, this is going to come together in a little bit here. But he says, that's the example. That if we're going to be a total follower of Jesus, we need to be living like Jesus lived. We need to be doing like Jesus did. And that is loving not just the righteous, not just the good ones, not the ones that make us feel good, but the ones that don't. The ones that are our enemies. And so that's how God moves. The second thing, he says, for example, get more. And again, don't worry about the things, just understand the concept. He says in verse 46, he says, if you love those who love you, what reward will you get? He says, loving those that love you, like, there's nothing you can get from that. I mean, maybe they'll be like, thanks. Maybe there's something that you can get from them. But Jesus makes this statement, which, again, to us, we're kind of like, okay, whatever. Why are you talking about the IRS? This is kind of weird. But he makes this statement and says, are not even the tax collectors doing that? Now, you need to understand something about tax collectors. Tax collectors were Jewish people. In the context where Jesus is talking here, they were Jewish people making money by working with Rome. So when you read about tax collectors in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, when you read about it in the Gospels and Acts and these stories about tax collectors, like, they are kind of really hated because they're sellouts. They're the ones that know better. They know God's law. They know the Old Testament Torah. And yet they're going to work for Rome. Why? So they can make a buck. And so he's implying here, like, what do the tax collectors do? Oh, they love Rome. Why? Because Rome gives them a cut as they take money. And by the way, let me add this to the tax collectors. Not only were they working for Rome, but they were cheating on behalf of Rome. Because Rome could determine whatever you owe as tax. They could change the rules right on the dime, and you had, no pun intended, and you had no chance. And so these tax collectors were cheating on behalf of Rome. And a lot of times they would actually line their own pockets, which is the story of Matthew or Levi in the Gospels. And he was a tax collector and Jesus called him, but we're not talking about that today. But this idea of someone that is cheating on behalf of the enemy, he says, those are the ones that love those who will love them. They want to get a reward out of that. He says, get something more out of this. There is something way bigger than a financial reward. By loving your enemies, there are eternal rewards. And again, we're going to come to that in a little bit. But Jesus just says, get more. Don't be stuck on these shallow little, silly, like, oh, I'm going to love you and you can give something for me. Maybe I'll be nice to you because if I'm nice to you, maybe I'll get that raise that I want. Jesus is like, that's so shallow. Look for something bigger here. You want something big? Love the ones that don't love you. Love the ones that are your enemies. Love the ones that hate you. Otherwise, you're just a tax collector. Which, you know, maybe that is an insult today. Otherwise, you just work for the IRS. Unless, of course, you do work for the IRS. And thank you for working for the IRS. I mean, we do have roads and stuff. So taxes are good. So, that's the second example. The third example is greet many. Again, God moves, get more, greet many, whatever. Okay, but in verse 47, Jesus then goes on and says, if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? He says, you know, if you're just going to greet those that are your own people, or your translation might say your brothers or sisters or those that are like you, that's what he's saying here. If you're only like being hospitable, if you're only being kind to the people that are yours, the Greek word here is adelphos, where we get the word philadelphos, which is brotherly love. And we're not going to talk about Philadelphia right now. I understand. Things are okay there. The Giants are playing the Patriots today. Super Bowl rematch, right? I think between them they have, what, 5 wins? Okay. Anyway, what am I talking about? Oh, Adelphos. Like, those that love you. Those people that are your own kind. Like, if you love the ones that are just your family, like, what are you doing more than others? He then kind of does another insult. He says, don't pagans do that? Don't people that don't love God do that? They love their own kind. And this is similar to what we were talking about last week. We were talking about offering hospitality. You know, we use that phrase, hospitality, to the lesser. And again, this isn't like, I have a welcome mat at my door. But this is actually going out of your way to greet. And that's what he's saying. It's not like, good morning to you, sir. But to actually be welcoming and going out of your way and looking for those that are not like you, looking for those that are your enemies and saying, you know what, I'm not going to retaliate. I'm going to actually, even though you've been mean to me, I'm going to be kind to you. You know, Christmas time, right? We're hitting that season now. And a lot of times there's office Christmas parties or company parties, and maybe there's a gift exchange, or maybe not even an exchange, maybe people just give gifts to people. And the question would be, is if you were in an office and there were, because I know you all work in an office, just like Dwight. But, you know, if you were in a group of 10 people, you have 10 coworkers, you probably have coworkers, and one of them was a jerk, just nobody liked them. I don't think any of your coworkers would have a problem if you skipped them with your annual, I don't know, candy cane Christmas concoction. But Jesus says, no, don't do that. Give to them as well. He says, if you're only greeting your own people, if you're only being kind to the people that you're comfortable with, that's what pagans do. That's what people that don't even love God do. And are you like them? So Jesus kind of drops some pretty intense examples here. Like, you think you're better than God? Because God moves. God loves those that are righteous and unrighteous. And are you going to be like a tax collector? Because all they do is love the people so they can get something back out of it. Are you going to be like that? Or are you just going to greet the people that are like you, your own type, the people you're comfortable with? Because that's what people that don't even love God do. They do that for their own type too. He says, we should be different. We should be very different. He said, our attitude is, we should do this all day. Like, I'm going to take it. Whatever my enemies, he's specific here, are throwing at me, I'm going to take it. Because I want to be different for Jesus. Because I want to be a complete follower of Jesus. And so he shares those two things, those two drastic things. Don't retaliate. Give. If you have a chance to retaliate for something that someone has done to you, do you? And then if so, saying, okay, I could easily do this. But would you even go beyond that and give to them and care for them? And then he says, don't hate them. Like, it's easy to do the giving thing. Okay, yeah, I can give you this. My heart's not in it. He says, no. Don't hate them. Love them. Pray for them. Because that's what God has done for us. So Jesus says we need to be drastic in loving our enemies. I guess Jesus didn't say it. I said it. But Jesus said that we should go the extra mile. But we need to be drastic in loving our enemies. That means we need to go beyond not just what was... And again, the issue with retaliation is that no one is going to disagree with you if you get back at them. And frankly, your friends, the people closest to you, will probably say something like, oh, they're getting what they deserve after what they did to you. And if you hate the people that have done things to you, and they may be very close to you, they may be family. They may be friends. And when you tell that people what they did to you, they're all going to be like, oh, yeah, they deserve it. But Jesus says, no. We need to be drastic here. We need to be different. We need to stand out and not make this like, oh, it's not a big deal. No, we're going to be different. And so the issue here is that when we say something like that, when Jesus says something like that to us, and we've talked about this kind of throughout this series, we're kind of like, well, did he really mean that? How can we kind of twist this a little bit so I don't have to do the hard thing? But what comes to mind, at least in my human mind, is the, but what about? But what about, you know, like Jesus said this, but what about this situation? What about this scenario? What about what happened here? And we have these ways that we kind of go through and like, you know what, there's probably a way that I can, you know, maybe not get around it. I'm not going to disobey Jesus, but, you know, maybe find a little gray area where I can meander through here. And I want to get away from giving us room. There's no latitude. There's no gray area. We need to be drastic about it. That's what drastic means. It's not like be, it means be drastic. And so there are four different things I'm going to ask. And again, these are just general thoughts in my mind of what do people often say when something bad happens, when someone hurts them. We're going to have these gut responses. And this isn't easy, just to be clear. I'm not saying, oh yeah, I love that person that abused you sexually. Just do it. No, it's not easy. But that doesn't mean that there's a loophole for that. Jesus wants us to be drastic about these things. So the first what about is, what about undeserved attack? So what if someone did something to me and I didn't deserve it? I didn't provoke it. Just out of the blue, they hurt me. They did something that I did not deserve. Like, I get it. Yeah, I was kind of obnoxious. And then eventually they got tired of it and punched me in the face. Like, okay, yeah, I deserve that. I guess I shouldn't retaliate. But what about those moments when I didn't do anything? I was just a child. And they did this to me. I was just minding my own business and they were the drunk one. What about an undeserved attack? And that's a good question. Like, what about those situations where you didn't even do anything? What do we do about that? Well, Jesus was attacked undeservedly. Jesus was tried, sinless, lived a sinless, perfect life. So there was nothing there that Jesus did that deserved what he went through. And he was illegally tried, and we did a whole series called The Trials about that. You can find that online. And then eventually he was crucified. And crucifixion has been known till today to be the most inhumane, the most torturous form of execution ever devised. Romans were really good at doing really bad things. And they had perfected the crucifixion. And so Jesus was forced to carry his cross, which also, by the way, was part of Roman impressment. Excuse me. When he dropped his cross, they found Simon, and they told him, you need to carry his cross 1 mile. That was the rule. But anyway, that's the same rule there in play. And then they took him, and then in Luke chapter 23, we read this. So he's walking to be crucified. When they came to the place called the skull, they nailed him, meaning Jesus. They nailed Jesus to the cross. And two criminals, the criminals were also crucified, one on his right and one on his left. While he is being nailed to a cross, undeservedly, unjustly, unfairly, Jesus suddenly went, wah, called down angels from heaven and brought the power of God and everyone and shot lightning bolts out of his fingertips and they all died Indiana Jones style. No, that's not how the story, if the online cut out, you know, that's not how the story ends. No, what does it say? Jesus said, Father, forgive them for they don't know what they are doing. And I know there are hard situations. I know there are things that have happened to us that we don't deserve. And at the very least, can I say that Jesus gets it? Jesus gets you. And Jesus was willing, completely undeserved. And again, this isn't like later. This wasn't after the resurrection. This was in the moment while spikes are being driven through his wrists and through his ankles, he is saying, Father, forgive them. Again, not to be obnoxious, but are you any better than Jesus? But Jesus says, hey, I get it. I get it. So the what about undeserved attack? Next one, another one is, what about repeat offenders? Like, I forgave them, but they did it again. And then I forgave them, and they did it again. Like, okay, like, at this point, you're like, nope, sorry, three strikes and you're out. Like, we know how that works. That's a baseball metaphor, Kara. And we have that idea. Well, what if, like, oh, they did it, and then they did it again, and that's it. I'm done. I've hit my limit. I'm not going any further. They're toxic. I'm going to cut them off. They did something. I'm going to cancel them. Whatever. And we have these reasons. And our culture has a lot of these things that's built into that. And again, not that this is like I'm just using a popular cultural phrase. It hurts. It hurts when someone hurts you, and then you forgive them, and they hurt you again, and you forgive them, and they hurt you again. And again, this isn't something that was new. It says here in Matthew chapter 18, Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Like, I love that Peter just laid it out there for us. Like, okay, so what is the number, Jesus? We're ready. And Peter says, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? Now, what you need to understand about seven was that, again, Roman law, or not Roman law, sorry, this was rabbinic law. There was the Old Covenant, little history lesson here. The Old Covenant, Mount Sinai, Moses goes to the top of the mountain and gets the Ten Commandments, along with a whole bunch more laws that the Jews had to follow. And ultimately, Jesus came and fulfilled them, and we talked about that in other series as well. But one of the things, after the law was given, then the Jewish rabbis, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, they kind of added their own to it. And there's some estimates that there's like 600 and some extra rules that were added on top of the rules that God gave them. But one of these rules was three times. That if someone sinned against you, you're allowed to forgive three times. And the Jewish rabbis would say, fourth time, they don't deserve it. So three strikes and they're out. That was the law. That was the rule of the day. It wasn't God's law, but it was the rule that that the Jewish religious leaders were operating under. And so Peter's like, watch this. Hey, guys, remember how we were fighting about who's greater? I'm greater because I'm about to say something to Jesus. How about seven times, Jesus? He's looking pretty good. Because he not just doubled the rabbinic rule, but added one more to it. But Jesus says, not seven times, Jesus replied, but 70 times seven. Which 70 times 7 is 490. It's 490. I got that right. Now, your other translation, it might say 77 times. There's the way the word is written in Greek, it's hard to tell whether they meant 70 times 7 or 77 times. But Jesus wasn't doing a number. This wasn't about a number. This was about as many times as it takes. How often do I forgive someone, a repeat offender, someone that hurt me over and over and over? Every time. Every time. Okay, but I'm at like 9. Yep, then go 10. That's not fair. Nope, it's not. We'll get to that in a second. 12? Nope, go 13. Whatever it looks like to go beyond, to forgive them as many times. And so there's no real room here for, well, that's it, three strikes and you're out. Jesus said as many times as it takes. And again, I'm not saying, and I don't think Jesus is saying that this is easy, but it's the reality. Is that if we're going to be complete followers of Jesus, we need to forgive and then forgive again and then forgive again and then forgive again and then forgive again. Spoiler, because that's what Jesus has done for you and me. And I can assure you that if Jesus stopped at 3 or 7 or 77 or 490 times, that's still way less than the number of times that I have sinned against him. And if I hit 491, then I'm going to hell. But Jesus says, as many times as it takes. Which then brings us to the next thing. But what about justice? What about justice? What about getting what's right and what's wrong? And I thought God is a God of justice. And how does this work? Come on. What about giving those people what they deserve? What about that? And in Romans chapter 12, Paul writes this to the church in Rome. He says, "Do not take revenge, my dear friends." So just to be clear, he's saying the same thing that Jesus said. "Do not take revenge, but leave room for God's wrath." Leave room for God's wrath. And that's kind of like this, yeah, fire and brimstone, lava falling down on your head. You're going down, sucker. For it is written, "It is mine to avenge. I will repay," says the Lord. And again, like, and maybe this is different than you've understood this passage before, but I always was like, yeah, I'm not going to take revenge because God's going to smite them. They're going to be smited, smitten, smat, smote, whatever. They're all of them at the same time. God's going to get them. And then Paul goes on and says, "On the contrary," now this is very echoing what Jesus said, "if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head." And there's a lot of discussion of what that phrase meant. It has something to do with humility. There's a lot of, I'm not going to get into it now, but it doesn't mean, let me just be clear, it doesn't mean that you're going to take a burning coals and pour it on their head so that they go, "Oh, I'm melting, what a world. No, it's nothing like that. It's a metaphor of saying you will just show them how humble they really should be. So get it? He's saying, God, don't take revenge. Instead, care for them. Don't retaliate. Give to them. Don't hate. Love them. And leave room for God's wrath. And so that way, you, by doing that, you're going to force them into humility because you're so kind to them. Because you stand up and say, "I can do this all day." He goes on and says, "Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Now, listen to this. Paul says, don't take revenge, but leave room, because God will provide justice. God will enact his wrath. But if you don't jump in and take God's place by taking revenge, that wrath of God may be placed on Jesus. You with me? Jesus, or Paul is saying here that if we let it go, God's wrath, God is God of justice. Someone is going to suffer for the sin of that person. He says, but maybe your kindness, maybe your giving, maybe your lack of retaliation is what it's going to take for them to turn their heart over to God. And God says, yes, you are going to get my wrath, except it's not going to fall on you. It's going to fall on my son, because that's why he came. And so Paul is saying here, maybe we avoid revenge because what if you're the reason? And I know it's your enemy. I know it's hard. But what if you're the reason that they give their heart to Jesus? Because you show them kindness when they deserve revenge. And God is a God of justice. There is suffering and punishment for that person's sin to you. But Jesus stepped in and stepped onto the cross and said, "I'll take it." And guess what? That's what he did for you. And we're glad that God is a God of justice. God is a God of wrath. Jesus was on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why? Because he was taking the wrath of the Father. And so Paul says, you know what? We'll talk about justice. You want to talk about justice? Ask God about justice. Oh, you mean sending my sinless son to die for you so that justice will be served? To take your punishment? That's justice. And that's what Jesus did for us. And he says, by waiting, by giving, not taking revenge, but giving the opportunity to love them and to serve them, maybe you're the one. What? They're my enemy. Yeah, you are the one that could lead them and point them and draw them to Jesus. There's a story here. By the way, you know, this idea here is why David, if you remember the story of David, King David, he was in the cave and Saul was there and he could have killed him because Saul was going to the bathroom. and he was sneaking up behind him and could have killed him. And he says, no, I'm going to leave it alone. I'm going to let God deal with it. That's the same principle. We talked about that in our After God series, which you can find on the opening slide. But there's a story here. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the U.S. gymnastics, the women's gymnastics team. There was a trainer, David Nasser, that was accused of sexually abusing, not just accused, but arrested, tried, and the whole deal, convicted of sexually abusing, over 150 victims that were a part of the gymnastics team. And many of the American gymnastics, the gymnasts that we know, Simone Biles, Allie Raisman. So the first gymnast to make this accusation public, her name was Rachel Den Hollander. And as part of the trial and at the end of his conviction, every one of the victims was allowed to speak directly to Nasser and confront him for what he did to them as children. And so since she was the very first one to offer to accuse him, she was the last one to speak. And she speaks directly to him in the courtroom and says, these are her words, should you ever reach the point of truly facing what you have done, the guilt will be crushing. And that is what makes the gospel of Christ so sweet. Because it extends grace and hope and mercy where none should be found. And it will be there for you. She says, I pray you experience the soul-crushing weight of guilt so you may someday experience true repentance and true forgiveness from God, which you need far more than forgiveness from me, though I extend that to you as well. And it says the courtroom was silent. She had every right for revenge. She had every right to say the hard things, but says, no, I'm not going to do that because maybe my kindness, my love to you is what you're going to need to hear so that your heart turns and then God forgives you too. So what about justice? God is a God of justice. And fortunately for us, as followers of Jesus, Jesus took that wrath on the cross, defeating sin. And so, again, I doubt that it was easy for Rachel Den Hollander to say that. It's not easy. But her willingness to forgive. So, what about undeserved attack? What about repeat offenders? What about justice? And what about me? What about me? Like, what about me? And that's often what comes up in this kind of a conversation, the challenges of something like this. Like Jesus says, turn the other cheek, go the extra mile, give them your cloak, don't take revenge. It's drastic stuff for your enemies. What about me? And we're told here, right, that we need to be drastic about loving our enemies. Look what Paul writes to the church that he planted in Colossae, in Colossians chapter 1. He says, this includes you. Me? Yes. You. Who were once far away from God. You were his enemies. He's speaking to us. He's speaking to humanity. We were once far away from God. This includes you. This includes me. We were his enemies, separated from him by our evil thoughts and actions. That is you. That is me. That's where we were. We were the enemies. Yet now he, God, has reconciled you to himself. I mean, he has fixed it. He did the work to bridge the gap. He reconciled the relationship through the death of Jesus because someone needs to suffer. Someone needs to be punished for the sin. And he said, I'm going to send my son to do it for you. Not because you did it, not because you earned it, not because you deserve it. You were the enemies. I was the enemy. And he sent his son to reconcile us through his death, through the death of Christ in his physical body. As a result, he has brought you into his own presence. And you are holy and blameless as you stand before him without a single fault. See, it's one thing to be like, oh, I don't want to love my enemies. They don't deserve it. But if we want to be, we got to be careful. Because who are the enemies? It's us. We were God's enemies. And if God acted the way we feel sometimes, we would be hopeless. We would be going to hell. But God sent his son. And again, it wasn't us going to him. We were the enemies. And he says, no, I'm doing this for you. You don't deserve it, and I'm doing it for you. There's nothing you did to earn it. I'm still going to do it for you. You're not good enough. I'm still doing it. You're my enemy. I'm still doing it. And he sent Jesus to die in our place. And because of Jesus, we're holy and blameless. Like, there's nothing. There's nothing there. And I guess one question is, have you accepted that truth? Have you believed it? Simply believe, because again, there's nothing you can do to earn it. Have you taken the time, have you believed what Jesus did for you on the cross and taking your sin? He took your place. And it's simply through faith in Jesus. And if you're not sure about that, let me know. We can talk. I'm sure you can grab one of the people up on this stage, the First Impressions team. They can point you to someone that can talk to you about this. But don't miss that. Like, that's all of us. We had an issue with the computer earlier, and it was crashing on us. And I said, it's a pagan computer that's godless and doesn't love the Word of God, because when we were loading the Bible slides into it is when it crashed. And Matt was like, oh, you're being so hard on the computer. I'm like, hey, man, we're all sinners. We're all losers. We're all in the same boat. And that's why Jesus stepped in. So the whatabouts, what about undeserved attack? You know what? That's what Jesus did on the cross. He didn't deserve it, and he still forgave. What about repeat offenders? 70 times 7, as many times as it takes. Because that's what God did for us. What about justice? Yeah, that's what Jesus did. If we step back and say, I'm not going to take revenge, and leave room for God to work, God might change their heart, and Jesus takes God's wrath. And then what about me? We're all enemies of God. And Jesus stepped in for us. He was the one that reconciled the relationship. So the point is, we need to be drastic in loving our enemies. Because maybe you are the one that can step in and reconcile the relationship. You can be the one that steps in and loves someone that doesn't deserve it. That you could be the one that goes the extra mile and changes the heart of someone. And you don't do it because it feels good. You do it because that's what God has done for us. That's what Jesus did for us. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your son, for what you, God, did for us through him on the cross, that we do not deserve it. We are enemies of God. We were enemies of God. And you stepped in and offered your son to take our place. And thank you that there's nothing that we can do to earn it, that we simply believe because you did the work, because you did the work of reconciling, because you stepped in to fix the relationship. And I pray that you would help us, those of us that are Christ followers, that call ourselves followers of Jesus, that as Jesus said, that we would be complete, that we would be a full follower of Jesus by loving our enemies, by caring for those people that don't deserve it, by not retaliating, but instead giving, by not hating, but instead loving. And God, we know, you know us, you created us. You know this is not easy. And so I pray that you would help us. I pray that you would help us to offer that love, to extend that in some dreadful, dire, ugly, hurtful, desperate situations. And God, I thank you that Jesus understands. Jesus gets us because he was on that cross. Didn't deserve it. And yet still said, forgive them. So I pray for this, the things we talked about this month. God, this has not been a fun series. This has not been easy stuff. Don't allow us to ignore or dismiss it because of that.
Help us to look deeply into our own hearts, look at ourselves and decide what drastic things we need to do so that we can follow you. Help us to become more and more and more like Jesus every day. It's in his name we pray. Amen.